The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mark Newman from the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall share with you information from various medical sources. The People's Pharmacy, Joe and Teresa Graydon. Manuka, that's spelled M-A-N-U-K-A. Manuka honey helps heal cracked fingers. Question. I have deep cracks on the sides of my thumb and first finger. They get so sore that I am barely able to hold a pen or pencil to write. A friend of mine urged me to use Manuka honey, then cover it with a bandage. Manuka honey is used in burn units to aid healing. My crevices closed up within a couple of days. It's amazing. Answer. Manuka honey comes from New Zealand, where bees visit the flowers of the Manuka bush, Leptospermum scorparium. This special honey has antimicrobial and antioxidant activity. As a wound dressing, it stimulates the immune system to help build new tissue. And that's cited in the journal Current Drug Metabolism, October 2017. A systematic review of randomized controlled trials concluded that honey dressings are helpful for treating burns. And that's cited in the journal Burns, February 2017. Question. I started taking turmeric pills after reading that this spice might help, but might be helpful against pain. I work sitting in front of a computer all day and had my terrible pains in my hip, leg, and back. A few weeks after taking one pill a day, my pain was greatly relieved. I've been taking three pills a week and have had no recurring back problems for 3 years. Answer. Many readers report that turmeric or its active ingredient, curcumin, can ease pain from a variety of causes. There are risks, though, as this reader relates. The turmeric ginger tea I have been drinking has been very helpful in easing my headaches and fibromyalgia pain, but a rash is driving me crazy. It started on the left side of my neck and has moved down to my chest. I have never seen anything like this before. I searched the web and bingo. I learned that turmeric can cause skin rashes. What else can I use as a natural and anti-inflammatory without risking a terrible skin rash? Some people are allergic to turmeric. Another risk is liver enzyme elevation. People taking anticoagulants should also avoid this yellow spice. Other natural anti-inflammatory medicines come from the Ayurvedic tradition, Ashwagandha and Boswellia. Herbs and spices that can help ease joint pain include cayenne, ginger, juniper, and rosemary. EpiPens left out in the cold might not work. Question. In early 2015, the Veterans Affairs Hospitals sent my EpiPens via the U.S. Postal Service. They landed in my mailbox on a day that was 34 Fahrenheit out. I was not at home when they arrived, and I got home about 4 hours after the mail is usually delivered. You were right to be concerned. The official prescribing information from the company states store at 20 to 25 degrees Celsius, which is 68 to 77 degrees Fahrenheit. Excursions permitted to 15 to 30 degrees, which is 59 to 86 Fahrenheit. Do not refrigerate. Most home refrigerators maintain a temperature of 36 to 37 degrees Fahrenheit. Consequently, the mail order service from the VA did not treat your injectable epinephrine appropriately. We fear that many other mail order medicines may also be exposed to temperatures outside the FDA mandated range. Question. I had been on atorvastatin for only a few days when I was taken to the emergency room after a 12-hour episode of transient global amnesia. I had a battery of tests, but all were negative. Is there any more recognition of the role of statins in transient global amnesia? Answer. We first heard about transient global amnesia in connection with statin-type cholesterol-lowering drugs from Dr. Dwayne Graveline. This astronaut physician shared his story with us nearly 2 decades ago. He reported a 6-hour episode in which he lost his memory and couldn't recognize his wife. A year later, he was put back on Lipitor and once again suffered TGA. Since then, we have heard from many other readers who, like you, have experienced this scary reaction. The prescribing information lists, quote, memory loss, forgetfulness, amnesia, memory impairment, and confusion linked to statin use. Question. I read a news story on your website about pyrethroid insecticides harming the heart. I use permethrin-treated clothing to keep ticks off. Do you know if such chemicals are absorbed through the skin? Answer. The research you refer to was published in JAMA Internal Medicine December 30th, 2019. People exposed to such insecticides were at greater risk of dying from heart disease. Some studies show marginal absorption. A study of the German military, however, showed that soldiers wearing permethrin-impregnated uniforms had high levels of permethrin metabolites in their urine, and that's cited in the journal Occupational and Environmental Medicine, February 2014. Coffee, tea, or chocolate for good health. Americans have a puritanical streak. This way of thinking suggests that if something hurts or tastes bad, it must be good for you. Conversely, things that taste good are often considered bad for you. That could be why many people believe that coffee, tea, and especially chocolate are sinful treats. Science has been contradicting this view for decades, though. Take coffee, for example. There is growing evidence that this popular morning beverage has health benefits. For one thing, coffee is rich in antioxidant compounds. People who drink 3 to 4 cups of coffee daily are significantly less likely to be diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, cited in the European Journal of Nutrition, June 2016. In addition, coffee drinkers appear less prone to congestive heart failure, stroke, and coronary heart disease, cited in Progress in Cardiovascular Diseases, May, June 2018. A recent meta-analysis of 40 studies found that coffee drinkers were less likely to die prematurely, with the fewest early heart disease deaths among those sipping 2.5 cups a day, cited in the European Journal of Epidemiology, August 2019. Those who consumed 2 cups daily had lower rates of cancer as well. One additional benefit of coffee, when people are hospitalized for abdominal surgery, they recover bowel function sooner and can be discharged earlier if they drink coffee. That's cited in Diseases of the Colon and Rectum, August 2019. In a study of 100 people, half got a cup of coffee with each meal and half got decaf tea instead. What about tea? In countries like China and Japan, where the preferred hot beverage is green tea, people associate it with health and longevity. They have good reason to do so. A study that followed more than 100,000 Chinese adults for about 7 years found that green tea was associated with lower mortality rates, cited in the European Journal of Preventive Cardiology, January 8, 2020. Those who consistently consumed at least 3 cups a week were 20% less likely to die of a stroke or heart attack during the study. The Puritans among us might be willing to grant that green tea could have health benefits, but they probably raise their eyebrows at chocolate. A number of randomized controlled trials have confirmed that cocoa flavanols have significant health benefits. They lower blood pressure by relaxing blood vessels. That's in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, February 2017. Moreover, people who get high doses of cocoa flavanols daily seem to have better cognitive function, cited in Plant Foods for the Human Nutrition online, January 13, 2020. Cocoa flavanols are also known to have strong anti-inflammatory effects, cited in Frontiers in Pharmacology, December 12, 2013. Should you wear a mask in flu season? Question. I take immune-suppressing drugs for multiple sclerosis. During flu season, I wear a face mask, to protect myself from viruses. I also wear one whenever I travel. I felt a little awkward the first time I wore a mask on an airplane, but I soon realized that it was my, quote, superpower. People seem to avoid me, which is just fine. I also bring hand sanitizer to wipe down the tray table, armrests, and anything else that I end up touching. Answer. We applaud your prudence. Millions of people are now taking immune-suppressing drugs for rheumatoid arthritis, psoriasis, colitis, and other serious autoimmune conditions. This may leave them more vulnerable to infection. A level 3 surgical mask is as effective as a disposable respirator against viral transmission. Cited in JAMA, September 3rd, 2019. Hand washing is also considered protective. Question. You recently wrote about the problem of mail order medicines being left in the cold for hours. This is a real problem. I used to work as a pharmacy technician for a mail order pharmacy owned by a major insurance company. Temperature was our enemy, but we did our best. We shipped medications that had to be kept cool, like insulin, in little styrofoam coolers with ice packs. We never shipped perishable medications on Friday, so they wouldn't sit in the hot warehouses over the weekend. Even so, we had daily calls from people who received hot or freezing medications. Our pharmacist's best guess was, it should still be okay, since we had no control over the shipper's procedures. Answer. Thank you for explaining the mail order problem so clearly. We normally hear from patients who also have no control over shipping. For example, one reader wrote, I ordered CoQ10 capsules. When the bottle arrived, the capsules had swollen. I used a thermometer and found the caps were over 110 degrees. I got a refund, but I'll never order medicines or supplements for home delivery again. There's no way of knowing where our medicines originate and how they're transported. This could affect their quality. I guess someone has to pay with their health to get action taken by the FDA. Sadly, the FDA has no jurisdiction over shipping. That is regulated by state to state, and there is virtually zero oversight. Study backs lung cancer screening. This is from the Wall Street Journal. Screening for lung cancer reduces deaths among current and former heavy smokers, according to a study published recently that adds to the evidence supporting wider testing. The study, conducted by researchers in the Netherlands and Belgium and published online by the New England Journal of Medicine, found that scanning the lungs of heavy smokers reduced lung cancer deaths by 24% in men and 33% in women over a decade. Both past and present heavy smokers are at high risk of developing lung cancer, and some researchers have argued for wide-scale screening to prevent deaths. In 2011, a large study in the U.S. found that putting the smokers through CT scans reduced lung cancer deaths by 20% compared with chest x-rays. But the practices of giving preventive CT scans has yet to be widely adopted, partially because some doctors doubted whether that was enough evidence to support the screening, especially given the risks of false alarms and complications from follow-up procedures and the small dose of radiation. The latest findings bolster the case for wider use of CT scans for heavy smokers, cancer doctors say. It's essentially confirming that CT lung screening is incredibly powerful at detecting early-stage lung disease, said Andrea McKee, the chair of radiation oncology at Lahey Hospital and Medical Center in Burlington, Massachusetts, who wasn't involved in the study. These patients can be cured, and that's something a lot of people don't get because lung cancer has been so deadly. Lung cancer is a leading cause of cancer death worldwide despite recent gains, largely driven by declining smoking rates and, to a lesser extent, the introduction of new kinds of drugs called immunotherapies that unleash a patient's own immune system on the tumors. Part of the problem, cancer researchers say, is that most lung cancers are caught late in the disease stage when the cancer has already spread and chances of long-term survival are slim. Lung doctors say that CT screening can help save lives because it catches the cancer earlier when it is still curable with surgery or other therapies. CT screening refers to computed tomography, an X-ray system that takes multiple scans to create a detailed image of the patient's lungs. The scan takes roughly 5 minutes and uses a low dose of radiation. After the U.S. study results, the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force, a medical panel that determines which tests and therapies must be covered by insurers, recommended in 2013 that people aged 55 to 80 be screened annually if they have smoked, on average, a pack of cigarettes a day for 30 years within the last 15 years. Medicare started covering the testing 2 years later in 2015, even though a panel of advisors recommended against it, citing lack of evidence. The Netherlands trial is the second biggest screening, following more than 15,000 heavy, current, or former smokers aged 50 to 74 for at least 10 years. Some 84% of the study subjects were men. The subjects either underwent CT screening periodically or didn't get tested at all. After a decade of follow-up, 156 men who had gotten screened had died from lung cancer, compared with 206 men who had not been screened, the study found. Among the subjects who were regularly screened, screening caught 59% of the lung cancers, and those cancers were more often diagnosed at an earlier stage. It further validates what has already been shown. Lung screening prevents death from lung cancer, said Jacob Sands, a thoracic oncologist at Dana-Farber Cancer Institute in Boston, who focuses on lung screening and diagnostics and is a spokesman for the American Lung Association. He wasn't involved in the study. The trial has a substantially lower rate of false positive screens than the 2011 study, a concern among those hesitant to endorse the screening. Most of the abnormalities caught in the scans don't end up being cancer, which some doctors say ends up creating unnecessary stress, follow-up, and sometimes procedures. Some 467 out of 22,600 male scans were flagged and required further workup, and 203 lung cancers were caught. With this result, we can be even more convinced that it works and that the harm-benefit ratio for the group as a whole is quite good, as a whole, and said Harry D. Koning, a professor of public health at Erasmus University Medical Center in Rotterdam and lead author on the trial. Your Health, Wall Street Journal, by Samathi Reddy. A placebo for pain relief, even when you know it's not real. Some patients with chronic pain can get relief from a placebo even when they know it isn't an active medication, a growing body of evidence showed. More researchers are looking at the idea of placebos, substances that have no actual pharmaceutical effect, as an alternative to traditional pain medications, which can be ineffective and carry significant side effects. Placebos might have particular potential for difficult-to-treat conditions like chronic back pain, cancer-related fatigue, and symptoms of irritable bowel syndrome, researchers hope. As many as 30 to 50% of chronic pain patients will respond to placebos, research suggests. And new studies are helping to identify genetic and brain differences that make certain people more likely to respond. It is a possibility that seems important and may offer relief for many people who are getting insufficient relief or have too many side effects on the medication they take, says Ted J. Kapchuk, director of the program in placebo studies and therapeutic encounter at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center in Boston, and a professor at Harvard Medical School. It's unclear exactly why placebos can help relieve pain, even when people know it's not a real drug. Some evidence suggests that patients still experience a level of relief by subconsciously picking up cues from a medical setting, such as engaging with the doctor, and even perhaps the act of taking a pill. Normally, placebos are used in clinical drug trials, to be compared with the effect of drugs in development. Sometimes physicians also prescribe very low doses of active medications that function as placebos. Giving patients a disguised placebo without telling them is considered unethical by the medical profession. But if patients are informed that they are taking a placebo, what researchers call open-label placebo treatment, it's ethical, says Dr. Kapchuk. Researchers in Germany published a study in the journal Pain in December showing that open-label placebos can help relieve chronic lower back pain, replicating a 2016 study. A similar study by University of Colorado Boulder researchers found that placebo saline injections reduce chronic lower back pain. Two other recent studies showed placebos openly given to cancer patients help relieve cancer-related fatigue. And a forthcoming study by German researchers found openly giving placebo to elderly patients helped improve knee pain. For the pain study, German researchers divided 122 chronic back pain patients into two groups. One group knowingly received a placebo treatment. The other group received no intervention but continued their usual treatment. The researchers found that the group knowingly taking a placebo reported a larger reduction in pain intensity, functional disability, and depression. There was no difference in objective measures of spine mobility, anxiety, or stress. Yoni Asher, a research scientist at Weill Cornell Medical College in New York, was the lead researcher in another study of chronic lower back pain patients when he was at the University of Colorado in Boulder. The study's results found that the 50 patients given a placebo of saline injections reported less pain a month later than a control group of 50 patients who received their usual care. Dr. Kapchuk's research shows that patients with chronic lower back pain, irritable bowel syndrome, and migraines benefit from being told they are receiving a placebo. He is finalizing the results of a larger study with more than 300 irritable bowel syndrome patients. He is also completing a 5-year follow-up analysis of the 2016 low back pain study to see how patients fared after they stopped taking the placebo. Catherine Tayo Hall, an assistant professor of medicine at Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston, studies the genetics of the placebo response. One day, she says, genetic tests may be able to predict which patients would benefit from a placebo treatment. We know that there are changes in your brain and physiology that correlate with your response to placebo. And to a large extent, these changes are consistent with pain signaling related to opioid and dopamine transmission in the brain. So, our thinking is if you have genetic variation in the proteins involved in those signaling pathways, that could influence your placebo response. Vania Apkarian, director of the Center for Translational Pain Research at Northwestern University Feinberg School of Medicine, studies which patients respond to placebo. In a 2016 study in the journal PLOS, PLOS Biology, he used brain scans to identify the regions in the brain that can predict a response to placebo in 56 chronic knee osteoarthritis pain patients compared with 20 control patients. He replicated the findings in a 2018 study in Nature Communications with 63 chronic back pain patients. About 30% to 50% of chronic pain patients will respond to placebo, says Dr. Apkarian. His studies have found a brain signature in patients who respond with more connectivity in the sensory areas of the brain. The effects last at least 3 months. These patients get enough pain relief from placebo that is as good as any drug on the market being sold for pain relief of chronic pain, says Dr. Apkarian. Aspirin and Your Heart, from The Costco Connection, by Linda Bernstein. Weighing the benefits and risks. Linda Bernstein is a PharmD and president and CEO of Vita Media Corporation, a medical communications company. According to the American Heart Association, in 2019 Heart Disease and Stroke Statistics Report, cardiovascular disease, including heart attack, stroke, high blood pressure, heart failure, and other forms of heart and vessel disease, is still the number one cause of death in the United States. It accounted for more than 840,000 deaths in 2016, about 1 in 3 deaths, at a cost of hundreds of billions of dollars. About every 40 seconds, someone in the United States has a heart attack. Aspirin prevents blood clots from forming and thus can help reduce the risk of heart attacks and strokes. Aspirin can also put some people at risk of gastrointestinal bleeding or bleeding elsewhere in the body. New guidelines for the use of aspirin in heart disease primary prevention, i.e., to prevent a first heart attack or stroke, were recently published by the American College of Cardiology and the American Heart Association. According to these 2019 guidelines, based upon recent clinical studies, low-dose aspirin, 75 to 100 milligrams orally daily, number one, might be considered for the primary prevention of cardiovascular disease among select adults ages 40 to 70 who have a higher risk of cardiovascular disease but are not at increased risk of bleeding. Next, should not be administered on a routine basis for the primary prevention of cardiovascular disease among adults older than 70. And finally, should not be administered for the primary prevention of cardiovascular disease among adults of any age who are at increased risk of bleeding. People at greater risk for bleeding who should avoid using aspirin include those with a history of stomach ulcer or bleeding from other sites, those older than 70, those who have blood clotting disorders, those with chronic kidney disease, and those who use medications such as non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, steroids, and blood thinners. Taking aspirin is not without risk. Before you start taking aspirin, be sure to consult with your health care provider about the risks and benefits of low-dose aspirin for heart disease prevention. Heart disease risks. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention states that high blood pressure, high cholesterol, diabetes, and obesity increase the risk of cardiovascular disease, so take steps to control them. If you eat an unhealthy diet, high in salt, saturated fats, trans fats, and cholesterol, are physically inactive, consume too much alcohol, or are a smoker, you're also at a greater risk. Finally, there are risk factors that people are born with and cannot do anything about, including families, genetic history, age, sex, and race or ethnicity. Your health care provider can help you assess your risk factors and whether lifestyle changes or medications are warranted to keep your heart healthy. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Mark Newman, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. So long until next time. If you have any comment or questions, please call 919-832-5138 and stay healthy.
Purpose of the North Carolina Reading Service is to connect people who are blind and print impaired with each other, their families, and the community by delivering news, information, and entertainment using the latest audio technology. If you have questions or comments, please give us a call at 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. You can also visit our website at ncreadingservice.org. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.